Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, this is your host, Paul Etzbitter Jr. And I'm here to remind you that if you have access to iTunes, we ask that you rate and review the show. That way we'll be able to climb the charts and continue to deliver bigger and better guests so that we can continue the educated hustle journey. And now let's start the show. Welcome to the Educated Hustle Podcast. This is your host, Paul Etzbitter Jr., and my co-host, Emilio Porter. Emilio, what's going on, man?
Chilling, man, and it's great to be back after the little hiatus for the holidays last week, but of course, we had to come back the week after and continue delivering that hot fire. But man, it's just a lot of stuff's been happening, right, since 4th of July, like a lot of great notable things. We're not going to get into the pop culture side because, you know, my co-host is not a big fan of that. But for, I think everyone can say that one of the biggest things that happened is Spider-Man came out over the weekend and it actually has earned the third highest opening for a film so far this year. So props to Spider-Man and Co. I saw the movie over the weekend with my girlfriend and, of course, my lovely daughter, and it is legit, like, They changed up the whole dynamic. They really made it about Peter being a kid. People who haven't seen the other Spider-Man, Peter Parker's kind of like a teenager / adult. This one is like he's a full-on 14-year-old. And one cool thing of note that I don't know if they did on purpose. Well, I guess they did do it on purpose. But all the love interests are women of color. So there's no white love interests, even though Peter's a white boy. So I don't know. Maybe that's turn a little pot over. But they got there, as the women say, melon or Milan or melon. I don't even know what it is. Melon.
Melanin, bro.
Or whatever. But yeah, great movie, great cast. And I can't wait for the sequels myself, personally.
I got you, man. Yeah, I'm going to have to go check that out. I mean, it's kind of, I'm like a little down on it because I'm like, how are they going to reboot this movie again within the last 15 years? So there's just so many reboots of it. But hey, man, if you give it that high of a praise, I might have to check it out, see what it does out there.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think the cool thing about this one is they don't really do an origin story. They expect you to know who Spider-Man is. It's like if you've seen Civil War, they just kind of jump into what happened like after Civil War. So there's no, we don't got to sit through Uncle Ben dying. And spoiler alert, or not really a spoiler alert, but they don't even mention Uncle Ben at all. So we don't even really know if he really even exists. Basic premise is Peter lives with his hot aunt. So that's, I mean, it's such.
Oh, yeah, from the movie. Okay,
yeah, so it's such a dope thing because, like, the origin story that you of Peter Parker that we've been fed over the years is, like, not really the same at all. Like, he has an Hispanic best friend who's overweight and he's a geek as well. And the high school that he's in, like, Flash Thompson, the bully that, you know, is Peter's most famous bully, is, like, I don't want to say, he's an Indian guy that if you've seen movies and stuff, you'll recognize who he is. But like, they basically took all the dynamics that we're used to and they flipped them, and they did in a way to where you're not really like, oh my gosh, what's going on here, but it's more like, oh, that's okay. So it's dope. I mean, I think they did a great job with it. I think Marvel was like, yo, we get Spider-Man, we're gonna make this like hard to not like, and I think they did the job there. But you know, we're not here to talk about Spider-Man. We're not here to talk about him. I'm trying to see if we were, so I could do it all day. But we're talking about instead our great guest today, man known as Kill. He is such a layered person because there's so much elements to him. And I think one of the coolest things about him is that he has the ability to strike up a conversation with anybody, which he does quite well in this episode with us, right, Paul?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kill is also a producer, mainly for hip-hop music. And he's a hip-hop historian. I mean, he drops knowledge about, you know, the original people who dropped music back in the day. He's very affluent about producing. He knows the history about who produced for what rappers, how the producer was the, you know, in the beginning was the headliner next to the MC. So he kind of goes in and teaches you about that information. Also, how nowadays producers can, you know, kind of learn on without even knowing like some kind of instrument. They could just kind of go on their iPad, download an app and learn that and become a producer. So he kind of talks about how that changed the game and if that is ruining the game of producing or if it's, you know, just part of what it is today. So there's a lot of topics that he talks about, and he was an interesting person to talk to and dropped a whole lot of knowledge for y'all.
Yes, a whole lot. And then also cool thing about him, he's also a fellow podcaster. He is the host of Apartment 5B, him along with some other people in his crew. And that's a podcast in particular where they like to discuss unpopular Black opinions, usually in the form of hip hop. So he'll say like an album that the majority might say is real cool, but he isn't feeling that. You know, to give you some hot takes, one of his hot takes was Kanye West 808s and Heartbreak isn't a good album. I've heard people have that take before, so that's, you know, that's not that hot to me. But this one might be interesting. I know my co-host knows it, but Kill actually believes that Lauryn Hill isn't actually that dope. So I don't know if that's fighting words or whatever, but if you want to hear how he defends his statement, you gotta listen to his show Apartment 5B, Unpopular Black Opinions. You know, the great show, great cast, definitely in a drove a conversation and one that'll make you think like, he might be onto something right there.
Well, I agree with number one where he says Kanye 808 isn't a good album because I have not listened to that album since it has been released and I don't really have any kind of craving to listen to that album again. But that Lauryn Hill, man, I mean, she only really dropped one album, but at least one solo album at least. So I mean, it was a classic though. So I guess I gotta check out that podcast, see what he's talking about, because I definitely don't agree with that hot take at all.
My favorite phrase has lately been show me the receipts, and that's what Paul was saying right there. Show me the receipts. But no, I mean, like I said, he does a lot of great things, and one of the cool things about him is he's a very big person in his community. He's given out free haircuts to kids in the community who are doing well by at least raising up one letter grade from where they're at. So he's not expecting like, you know, an F student to go to an A, but if you're an F student, you climb up to like a D or a C, he rewards you. He's also rewarding other young men in the community who necessarily don't have the money to get a haircut but have a job interview coming. He's trying ways to make sure that they look right for the interview. Like, he's really having a big helping hand. And it, like I said, it gets lost in all the layers he's in because there's so much stuff that he, you know, has a hand in, but he's really is a great guest of people in the community, and he definitely taught us something.
Yeah, man. And I'm looking a little scruffy right now, so it's about time for me to get that haircut, you know?
You got a little bit of a job interview coming up.
Gotta go to Philly, shout out to Kill, and get that haircut, you know? But nah, man, Kill kills it on the episode today, and it was a pleasure having him on, and I think you guys are gonna learn a lot.
Exactly. So without further ado, let's get right to it. Now presenting Mr. Kill.
All right, folks. And today's guest, we have Kill the producer. Kill, how's it going today?
Man, everything is great, man. I just, you know, again, thanks for having me on the show, man. It's always a blessing when people want to talk to you. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, and definitely. Thanks for coming on the show. And I kind of wanted to, you know, get things started off by asking, you know, what was the moment that you realized that you wanted to be producing?
Oh, man, it was probably back in 87, man. I'm old. So it was back in like 87 and I was in West Philly. I'm from Philly. And I was at my man Hollis's crib and just seeing all the equipment. He had a S950 sampler and I don't even know what kind of drum machine he had at the time. But just seeing him be able to put together the sounds and just being able to create music, I just knew right then that I was like, yo, I definitely want to do this. So that was like the moment that I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do.
That's dope. And that's kind of cool because, you know, that feeling of like seeing something in action and knowing like this is why I want to put my, you know, work in, especially when it comes to life. That's credible. Like, there's a lot of people who don't really get that sensation. So that's really nice and incredible that you're able to get that at such a young age. But I got to kind of ask, you know, it's something that's really not talked about in the game, I believe. But What is your opinion right now on the current state of a rapper slash producer's relationship right now? Obviously, some people kind of feel like producers don't get a lot of credit for, you know, making that beat that a lot of rappers come on and, you know, spit their legendary wordplay on. What do you kind of believe on that relationship being as a producer yourself?
I mean, I think the relationship has just changed over time. You know, there was a time when, you know, it was DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince or Eric B and Rakim when the DJ or the producer was more out in front. And then, you know, just as time went on, the MC just, you know, became more important than the producer, you know. And also just, you know, things are always changing. So you had the aspect of in my day back in 92 when I was at Morgan and I, you know, was trying to hustle to get money for equipment. Back then, you had to really want to produce beats, you know, because it costs like $2,500, $3,000 for a drum machine, you know, whereas now you could just buy an iPad and you got GarageBand and everybody's a producer nowadays. So I think it's kind of changed because you don't really have too many times when it's one producer and one MC. And I think that synergy is so important. You know, I always say Illmatic ruined hip hop because it kind of gave everybody the recipe to, you know, I call them value mill albums. It was like, oh, I could get two Premier, three Extra P, two Pete Rock. And that's how albums started to, you know, get made. And that's how all the sounds of hip hop started to blend together. So I really wish we could go back to those days of it just being the MC and the producer and you guys having that synergy together and actually being in the studio with each other at the same time. Because of technology, you know, I can send beats to, you know, I'm working with a cat right now in Colombia, you know. So it's like, you know, now that's great because it could never happen before, but there is something about being in the studio with the MC as the producer and just talking about life, you know what I mean? One of the dopest interviews I've ever read was Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis talking about how when they first linked up with Janet back in the early 80s, they just hung out for 2 weeks, you know, and, you know, she didn't even know they were crafting music. And then when they went in and she heard Control, it was like, wow, I love this. And they was like, yo, we just listened to what you were saying for the past 2 weeks, just getting to know you. And this is how we were able to create this incredible album, because we actually took time to listen to you and get to know you. And we heard what you wanted to say and what you wanted this album to be. And to me, that's why it's one of the most incredible albums ever. You know, so I would love it to go back to that, but I think technology is, you know, it's just always easy to say, hey, I'm in LA, you're in New York, let me just, you know, send space you some beats or drop it in a Dropbox instead of actually being in the studio together, vibing off of each other. And I think music, you know, takes a back seat, and I think it's hurting because we don't get more of that.
Woo, that's a whole gem filled answer right there.
And yeah, and I think you touched on something. Touch on something I never really thought about. So everybody talks about how Illmatic is kind of like one of the first, you know, classic albums of the 90s. And it's crazy how you said that it had a, you know, negative effect as far as producing goes. I didn't really know that there was a kind of a shift in how albums were made after Illmatic. So I guess could you kind of give us the blueprint of how albums were made before that? Was it just one producer per album?
Well, what it was is, you know, back in the mid 80s, early 90s, you know, each producer kind of rocked only with a certain crew. So Molly Maul only did beats for the Juice crew. So he only did Kane, Biz, Shantae, Kool G Rap, Master Ace. The Bomb Squad only did Public Enemy beats for Public Enemy. Herbie Lovebug only did beats for Dana Dane, Kid and Play, Salt and Pepper. So like each crew had a main producer, you know. EPMD, you know, Eric Sermon only did beats for EPMD or people, Redman and his crew. So back then, that's why a lot of hip hop didn't sound the same, because each crew had their own sound. Prince Paul did the stuff for De La out in Long Island, and, you know, Tip did all the stuff for Tribe and Queen. So everybody had their own sound. But then after Illmatic came out, and truth be told, to give props to the youngsters, their album was actually the first one that didn't. It just didn't blow up enough, because their album, The Aftermath, had Pete Rock, Premier, The Beatnuts, KG from Naughty by Nature at the time. So they were the first ones to really do it, but didn't blow. But so when Illmatic did it, I think it let people know, like, oh, snap, you know, I don't have to just go to one producer for beats. I can reach out to Q-Tip. I could reach out to somebody else. And that's why coming into the 2000s, it became like, oh, I could just get three Timbalands, two Just Blazes, three Kanye West, and two Ninth Wonder beats, and there's my album. But that sound now is all getting blended together, you know. So that's kind of one of the, you know, Illmatic was an incredible album. I'm in no way blaming it for that, but it kind of, you know, switched the way that people did beats. So when people say, oh man, everything on the radio sounds alike, or everybody sounds alike, that's why we didn't hear a lot of that in the 80s and the early 90s, because again, you know, people only worked with certain people, you know. And then two, more money came into hip hop in the mid 90s. So then producers started saying, hey, I just don't want to work with this cat's budget, because I got, you know, somebody else over here throwing a check at me for $50,000. And, you know, I'm, you know, so it kind of, money and Illmatic kind of shifted the way that, you know, music was, hip hop music was made.
That's crazy. So it's kind of like it enabled there to be super teams in raps, basically. Everyone was taking their talents to somewhere.
Great analogy. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
Dope. So, I mean, as you know, current day producing, like, do you feel that producers should be given more credit for their work?
Definitely. I think one of the hard parts about production now is, like I said early on, in any type of arts in the early 90s, if you wanted to be a photographer, you know, it cost a whole lot of money to go out there and buy a DSLR camera, whereas now you could just go in Best Buy and get one for $400. You know, if you wanted to be a DJ, you had to have the two turntables, the mixer, the speakers, but more importantly, you needed the vinyl, you needed those records, you know. But now with Serato, when you could just download anything and spin it, now everybody's a DJ. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where the hard part is just, because it's, everything is so easily accessible now, it's so many more producers. It's like if you're getting married and you want a wedding photographer, a real good wedding photographer may charge you $2,000-$3,000, but then you could have some dude who just brought a camera from Best Buy talking about, I'll do it for $300, and you're trying to save money, but I'm sure your pictures aren't going to look as nice as the other one. So it's kind of like, because we have so many different producers out there and everybody's producing. I always tell people, when I was at Morgan from 92 to 96, there was like 10 producers on the entire campus. Like, if you wanted beats, you had to come to one of us. Whereas if I go to Morgan right now, it's 10 producers on the first floor of one room, you know. So the problem is, you know, say you guys want to make an album and, you know, you like Kill Yo, hit us with a beat. And I'm like, all right, well, 500. And you're going to be like, oh, I don't have 500. I'm in college or I'm working. So I'll just go to this, you know, my man down the street who, you know, just started making beats. And, you know, I'll do that. Or I'll go on YouTube. And, you know, now they, you know, you could just rip an instrumental off of YouTube. So, you know, you can just rhyme over that. We're back in my day, again, going back into the 90s, like you had to find a DJ who had the instrumental for you to rhyme over. And back in those days, that wasn't even a demo. You couldn't be like, oh, I'm going to rhyme over a Common beat or a Jay-Z beat and present that to somebody as a demo, whereas right now you can, you know. So I think that's one of the reasons why producers, it's funny, we are like the last ones to get paid. I've been in studio sessions where people are like, yo, man, I can't afford this beat. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, we'll chop it up. We'll make something happen. And then they're like, oh, yeah, but I got to pay the videographer $800. And I'm like, well, why the videographer get paid? You know, like, whoa, you talking too much, fam. But it's like, because now visuals are actually more important. People don't just want to hear the audio. They want to, they're visual now. So they want to see the video. So the video is actually more important than the song. Somebody would rather rhyme over, you know, a Drake beat and have a dope video to go along with it than to rhyme over an original beat and not have a video go with it. So, yeah, producers, we're definitely getting the short end of the stick right about now.
I hear you, man. But, you know, it sounds like you're very knowledgeable. I'm sure you're making it work. You're making it as neat. So I wanted to kind of dive a little bit more into the business side of producing. So could you kind of discuss, you know, how it works to be a producer? What's the business model look like? And how do you actually become a producer as well?
Well, number one, the business model is always changing. Because of streaming now, that's taking a lot of money out of the industry. I actually just signed up for Apple Music. One of my homeboys finally convinced me to do it. And in doing it, it just almost depressed me, because it's like, why would anybody buy anybody's music anymore if you can pay $9.99 and just have access to every album except Jay-Z, unless you're on Tidal, you know? Why would you buy the music? You know, the average consumer isn't going to do that. So because of streaming and artists not getting a lot of money, you know, producers aren't getting a lot of money. So, you know, the business now has changed so that, you know, you're getting a small amount of money. You know, you're seeing more of those producers that were in the 2000s who were like A-list producers, like Timbaland and Just Blaze, who were, you'd hear them every song on the radio. You don't hear that anymore. You know, I'm seeing Just Blaze is doing a residency in Vegas as a DJ now. So people are trying to, those producers are trying to find different ways to, you know, continue to make money, because the industry is always changing. Because those were the producers who were getting $100,000 for a beat, and those days are like long gone. Like, you're not getting nowhere near that much for a beat anymore. So, you know, they're trying to find new ways. You know, I saw something the other day, it's like Q-Tip is DJing. I'm like, who doesn't DJ? Talib Kweli is DJing. Like, everybody's a DJ now. So, you know, everybody's trying to find different ways to make their money. And as far as how you become a producer, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to sound crazy, but Stephon Marbury said once, you know, back in 96 when he got drafted, that point guards are born and not made. And I believe that's like the same thing with producers. I believe producers are born. They're not made. It's kind of, you know, anybody can go out. I can tell you right now, yo, go get you a machine, you know, from Native Instruments for $500 and find a nice loop, you know, to just loop up and throw some drums under it. And you can call yourself a producer. But, you know, I just believe you've got to have that ear. I think the most important thing about music is having that ear to be able to, you know, hear, you know, the samples, or be able to, you know, play, of course, if you can play instruments. But, you know, it's really what your goal is. You know, if your goal is to become one of the greatest producers ever, then you definitely have to sit down. You got to do your knowledge. I mean, back in the 90s, I used to, every Wednesday, I'd get off work and I'd come home and I would listen and study one of my favorite producers' albums. I would put on Main Source's Breaking Atoms and just listen to it on repeat for hours to hear how Large Professor was, what he was chopping, you know, what kind of breaks he was using, who else was out at that time, like who was his quote unquote competition in 91, you know, and really, I really took the time to really study the game. And I think that's the thing, that if you really want to be a great producer, you want to sit back and study the greats and study the game. But I just think a lot of people just, you know, see production, they think it's a lot of money in it. So it's just like, hey, let me try it. And because, again, it's so cheap now. Like I said, in my day, if you spent $5,000 for equipment, you was going to figure out how to be a producer. You know what I'm saying? Whereas now, if you just get an iPad and it just so happens to have GarageBand, and you make a few beats and I can't sell them, okay, well, I'm not a producer anymore. You know, and it's no biggie because you really didn't invest anything into it. You didn't invest your money. You didn't invest your time into it. So to be a producer, I just think you've got to have that air. You've got to want to do the knowledge and do your homework. And, you know, of course, you know, get that equipment.
A lot of gems there, a lot of them. I want to get on the soapbox with you. I too am not a fan of streaming. I understand why it's needed, though. I mean, you know, people want to, you know, get access to services that for that low fee of $9.99 to get them access to. But I really do believe it does hurt the artists, like you said. And I mean, I'm only one person, but if I like an artist and I like their album, I buy it. I like to do what I can. You know, but that's neither here or there. obviously, you're very, very knowledgeable on a lot of things when it comes to music and producing, and you kind of take that knowledge with you when you host shows. So you're currently the host of Corner Radio and the Numbers on the Board podcast. Can you kind of tell our listeners what they can expect from those shows when they
They can expect just dope conversations, man. And the funny thing is, I just actually changed the name of the podcast from the Corner Radio to Apartment 5B. My mother-in-law just passed away 2 weeks ago in Harlem. And to do as a dedication to her and to keep her name alive, she used to live in Apartment 5B. So I actually just changed the name as a dedication to her. But, you know, what they're going to get is just dope conversations. You know, the one thing I try to do with my podcast is stay away from what everybody else is doing. So it's not going to be the podcast that's going to be talking about, you know, the new news. This is my podcast is not where you want to come. If you want to hear, you know, what's the new single or the new gossip or the new rumor, it's like, nah, like, you know, we're always doing things like hip hop what ifs. You know, what if Large Professor produced all of Illmatic? Would it still been a 5 mic classic? What if Tupac didn't get shot in New York and accused Biggie of shooting him. You know, what would, how would that have changed hip hop? You know, it was back in the day, LL Cool J was supposed to get the beat for Peter Piper from Run DMC, but Run used it first, you know, and, you know, questions like, what if, you know, Peter Piper wasn't in Run DMC's discography? Are they still as big as they are now? Or, you know, I'm just always, you know, the blessing is so many people, I chop it up with hip hop about so many people on a daily basis that at least once a week, I'm going to find a topic to talk about that's different from anything else. The last week's show we did was Unpopular Hip Hop Opinions. You know, I was on Twitter one day and I was just like, you know what? Low End Theory, Tribes, Low End Theory is not a Five Mic album. And like my timeline just blew up, like Kill You Bugging, it's Five Mic. So, you know, we do topics like that. So, you know, so it's always the unexpected. You're not going to, you know, tune into any other podcast and hear these conversations. You know, one of our most popular shows, we did a March Madness bracket of hip hop groups. And we broke it down to, you know, eventually who would be the champion and who was in the final four. And it was dope because people was like, oh, my group didn't make it. Or why is this group ranked so high or so low? But I'm like, if you follow college basketball, that's usually what happens on Selection Sunday. Everybody's mad because their team didn't make it, or their team, they think their team should be ranked higher. So, you know, the more people complain, the more I know I got it right, because that's how Selection Sunday is. So just always dope conversations, man. We've been blessed to be able to chop it up with A-list producers like Bink, who's done stuff for Jay-Z, Kanye West, John Legend, Prince Po from Organized Confusion has chopped it up with us. Grap Lover, Pete Rock's little brother, is always a guest on the show. Jake One, a producer out of Seattle. We actually just had PJ Morton on, who's an incredible, incredible R&B producer out of New Orleans. We had Tracy Lee on a minute ago because we had done a show on hip-hop one-hit wonders who didn't deserve to be. So basically, cats who may have only had one album out and it was really dope, but then we never heard from them again, you know. And then from the people we named on that show through Twitter, I started reaching out to people, and we got Tracy Lee on the show. Again, we got Grap Lover on the show. So we're, you know, those are the type of conversations you're going to hear. And I always tell people, you will never walk away without learning something. There's never a show that we do that I don't learn something, or somebody else on the panel doesn't learn something. I'm not going to waste your time. You will learn something during those podcasts.
I agree, man. And I wanted to know, before I jumped into my next question, who won the March Madness tournament? What group won?
Outkast won.
Outkast. I was about to say, man, Outkast, I mean, I know they from the South, but they ain't nothing like Outkast.
Yeah, I think Outkast is my personal favorite hip hop group of all time. I like wrote like an 8-paragraph piece on my website about why, because I always tell people we can argue opinions all day, but I like to argue facts because you can't argue them. You know, it is what it is. So, yeah, Outkast came. I think it was like Outkast, Tribe, Run DMC, and I think a Gangstar was like in the final four of it, you know. But it was dope. It was dope. You know, a lot of people downloaded the bracket, and you know, everybody was kind of tweeting me or, you know, texting me or DMing me, you know, who their final four was. So it was a dope, you know, definitely I want the show to be interactive. So we always try to do things like that to get, you know, the people who listen to kind of join into the conversation too.
Okay. And that's dope. And you said like you find something for your audience to learn every episode. And I checked out one of your shows and you guys are talking about, you know, did sampling clearance change hip hop? And I thought it was a really interactive, really thought provoking show, because I never really thought about, you know, how sampling can have an effect on the game. So can you kind of break down, you know, what your thoughts are about sampling and how it changed the industry?
Yeah, and it's crazy because I did that show because I didn't understand it. I always heard people saying, yo, sampling clearance killed hip hop. And I'm like, but people still sample. Like, so, and those are the things too. Like, I'll do a show like, okay, let me get some people who, you know, are on Twitter, invite them on the show. Like, explain this to me of how this happened, because MCs are still sampling. Jay-Z's album that just came out is like a sample on every song. So how did it kill hip hop? But through the conversation, we realized that it really didn't kill hip hop. It just changed the way that people made music. Back in the early 80s, you know, there's actually a book called Creative License, The Law and Culture of Digital Sampling by Kimbrew McLeod. And he's basically talking about how Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of a Million to Hold Us Back, and Paul's Boutique by the Beastie Boys, how those albums could not have been made in today because the sampling would have cost just too much money. In the early, mid-80s, early 90s, a lot of, you know, we didn't know about sampling. This was a whole new, like, form of law that we had to learn about. You know, people were just sampling old records, and, you know, the people who they were sampling really didn't understand it. The law didn't understand it. So what eventually happened is you would have groups like Public Enemy that may take literally like 10 samples to make one song. And that just can't happen nowadays because it would cost over probably $1 million or $2 million to clear all these samples, because now you know, the artist, or and the sad part about it is a lot of the artists that hip hop, you know, producers sample, the artists that we sample don't even own their publishing, you know, so it's not even going to the artist a lot of times. You know, they may have sold their publishing, kind of like how DLC sold his publishing to Eazy-E for a chain. You know, maybe an artist we're sampling from the 60s sold their publishing because they were hard up for money and the record label offered them some money and they sold their publishing. But now that people know, you know, they just now know that I can, you know, go after you for this amount of money, and I can go after you for, you know, this amount of money, or we can ask for this amount of money. I mean, if I sampled one of you guys, I mean, it's your music. You could sit back and say, well, Kill, I want $200,000 and I want, you know, half the royalties from the song. That's a lot of money to, you know, to sample one song. So, you know, I'm going to have to either come up with the money or say nah, and then try to find another sample, try to find a workaround. Jake One, one of the producers I was saying was on the show, he has a guy who's a ill musician. I forgot his name, but what will happen is a lot of times he'll take a sample and take it to him and pay him to replay it in a way that it still sounds like the sample, but that he won't get sued. But then again, you still need money for that, you know, so that's kind of how sampling has changed the game. And then in the mid 90s, they actually would hire producers like me. Record labels would hire producers like me to go after these artists. So, you know, it'd be like, hey, Kill, listen to this new Gangstar album. You hear any samples? I'd be like, yeah, this, you know, Gangstar's, you know, Master Pill samples Vic Juris. Then the lawyer would then, I'm sorry, I said the record labels. I'm sorry, lawyers would hire people like me. Then the lawyer would say, hey, Vic Juris, did you know that Gangstar just sampled your song and they just sold 100,000 records? Do you want to take action, a suit against them? So, you know, it again, like I said, it's always, that's the thing with the music industry, is always changing. And like I said, at the end of the day, we realized they really didn't kill hip hop, but it definitely changed it. When Pete Rock did Mech and the Soul Brother back in 93, he may have used four samples to make one song. But then by the time 1997 came around for his album Soul Survivor, 1998, he was now really more so just using one sample per song. So, you know, and that's what it helped. And that's what I mean by the show. I learned that through my own show by the guests I have on my show. So that's why I'm always like, you're going to learn something new. And I'm like, wow, I never realized that, because I felt like Pete's beats were dope in 92. They're still dope in 98. But one of my guests, Nick, who was on, you know, he kind of broke it down and I was like, wow, I never even realized that. Yeah, Pete went from using three samples per song to just one sample per song. So that's kind of how it changed the game.
And that's informative. I think we all learned something today just hearing you speak on it. And that's great that you have all this knowledge, because you also use it when it comes to helping people in life. So you actually are also a mentor. Yeah. Could you kind of tell us, as a mentor, like, what's a common roadblock that you see a lot of young men in your community face?
Just the fact that there's no men in the community for them to look up to. I've been working with youth in Southeast D.C. For over 17 years. And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me. From 2000 when I started to 2017 now, it's just no men. You know, in 2001, I was at an elementary school, John Tyler in Southeast, and the principal was like, you know, Mr. Kill, can you, you know, try to get some men to come out? You know, we were trying to have a Father's Day banquet or, you know, salute the fathers, but there are no fathers, you know, and that was in 2000. And I still had the same problem in 2017 working with kids. You know, we tried to do when I first started working in the community I'm at now, it's called Wellington Park. I was like, you know, let's do a family tree. And it really hit me because, you know, the kids were like, you know, Mr. Kill, I don't know who my dad is. You know, I've never met his family. So, I mean, I could do the family tree with my mom, but I can't complete this family tree. You know, or I've had kids say to me, you know, hey, are there any mentors in this neighborhood for you? Any men that you could look up to? And they're like, you mean men doing the right thing? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, nah, not at all. You know, so it's hard to learn how to be a positive young black male when you don't have any positive older black males around you to help you kind of show you the way and show you how to do things. So that's probably the number one biggest thing. I always tell people when people ask, like, all right, Kill, like, what could change the hood? Like, what could do it? You know, get rid of the drug dealers or get rid of this. And I'm like, yo, give me a man in each house, you know, a man and a woman and eat in a house on one accord. That'll change the whole neighborhood, because 9 times out of 10, if you're looking at a housing project, you're talking 400 or 500 units. There may only be about 10, 20, 30 drug dealers. So if there's a man in every apartment, they outnumber the drug dealers. So I'm not worried about the drug dealers. I'm not worried about any of that other stuff. If I could get a positive man in each one of those houses, and like Chris Rock said, nothing should scare a young man, and I'm going to tell your father, you know. But a lot of mothers can't do that. Half these mothers don't know who the father is. So you can't say, you know, the biggest threat in my day was, I'm going to tell your father, you know. But these kids, these mothers can't say that anymore. So that's the number one thing that I feel is like the roadblock for a lot of the young men I work with.
Yeah, man, that's a heavy burden to kind of carry. I know I was kind of reading a book this week, you know, by Dr. Boyce Watkins about, you know, getting more families involved in black communities and creating that community of, you know, creating that community so that we can uplift our people. Because, you know, nowadays it's like you said, man, there's a lot of missing role models out there. And I think we just got to, you know, pull our resources together and really focus on our youth, because that's really what's going to change the future.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you don't want to work with these youth, one day they're going to be robbing you. So you can pay now or pay later. My old head taught me that you can pay now or pay later. But when you pay later, it always costs more. You know, so you can pay your bill now on time, or you can pay it a month late. You got that late fee. So you could spend some time and work with these kids now and try and pour some knowledge into them. Or these will be the same kids who, you know, when they're, you know, revitalizing D.C. and tearing down all the projects and sending all these people from the hood out to the suburbs. Now them kids is breaking into your house out here in the suburbs. So, you know, you're going to pay now or pay later. So, you know, it's like just trying to get more people to, you know, come out and volunteer in the hood. And the blessing has been a lot of people who I've met on Twitter have actually come out to the neighborhood. Black men have come out to, you know, help me. So that's always a great thing, you know.
I agree, man. And, you know, one of the ways I've kind of got involved with, you know, your work and found out what you do is, you know, I read this article on the Huffington Post about, you know, you giving free haircuts to men with job interviews. I wanted to know, you know, what was your thought process behind putting that promotion piece together, and how did the community kind of react once they kind of saw your feature in the Huffington Post?
I mean, the one thing is, the blessing was I didn't do anything. That was Twitter. I always post pictures of, you know, me cutting the kids' hair or saluting my kids, you know, and for some reason, this picture just kind of blew up, you know. It got like, you know, 20,000 retweets and so many likes and everything. I have no idea why, you know, it's just God in action. And then the Huffington Post reached out and asked for the interview. And that was a blessing. The funny thing is nobody in my neighborhood reads the Huffington Post. So, you know, nobody in the hood, you know, even saw it, you know, anything like that. But, you know, the idea behind it was just, you know, I cut hair. I taught myself, you know, back in Philly. You know, I've been doing it 30 years. And, you know, when a lot of my boys, you know, in the hood, you really don't have a lot. Education is really not one of the things that's really, you know, looked at as a big concern in the neighborhood. So, you know, I was just sitting here thinking, like, what would have gotten me to just pay more attention in school? And it was like, yo, if I could have got free haircuts, man, I would have been an all-A student. You know what I mean? So it kind of started off like telling my boys, well, if you get on the honor roll, you know, I'll give you free haircuts. But I learned you have to, you know, work with people from where they are. You can't be an all F student and expect this kid to now be on the honor roll. So it kind of grew from, you know, being on the honor roll to getting your grade up one, you know, up one letter. But then I realized, well, that's only every quarter. So then it just dropped down to, if you just pass a test, if you can just show me that you pass the test with a C or higher, then you could get a free cut. You know what I'm saying? And then it kind of just grew from there because there was an organization that we partnered with who did a men's leadership class every Wednesday, and they lost their funding, so they had to pull out. So some of the men who were in that class stepped to me and was like, yo, Kill, would you be willing to lead it? And I was like, hell yeah. Like, yeah, no problem. That'd be an honor to do it. And then I've been doing that for a year, leading this men's group. And during one of the groups, one of the guys was saying, you know, I got this interview coming up, but man, I just, you know, I can't afford a haircut right now. I was like, man, that's nothing. I'll cut your hair. And then it kind of just started going from there. So, you know, just working with the men on resume tips, interview training, things like that. But just more importantly, just, you know, what it means to be a man, because, you know, especially in neighborhoods like the one I work in, you know, the definition of a man is just how tough you are. Like, you know, do you bust your gun? Do you beat people up? Do people fear you? And I'm, you know, trying to break down that mentality of that has nothing to do with, you know, being a man, you know. And I'm constantly always challenging them because, you know, most men don't want to, you know, be preached to and everything like that. So like and I do this with my teens too, like every men's group starts off with like a sports analogy. Like we'll be talking sports and I'll be like, yeah, you know, it's crazy. You know, I'm like, yo, the Redskins been losing for forever. Like, would y'all ever stop being Redskins fans? They like, nah, never, Kill. You know, I'm loyal to them till the day I die. And I'm like, well, why are men more loyal to their sports teams than we are to our wives and our families? You know, and then that'll start the conversation, you know, and it helps them see like, damn, I am more loyal to a team than I am to my own family. You know, I'll go out and, you know, tailgate and pay all this money for these tickets. And I'm like, when the Redskins win, you don't get anything back but joy, you know, but doesn't your family bring you more joy than that? You know, so I'm always just trying to find ways to get them thinking about ways that they can better themselves, better their relationships with their significant others, as well as with their children.
Well, it got deep there for a second. I had to sit in my mind and think about some things, but I definitely appreciate that. Wow. Got to go right back into it because, you know, you're a man in the community. You're always leading the new fight against just different things. And you actually have coined the term hashtag to give back. Could you kind of tell us what sparked that movement and how are you encouraging others to join in?
I think what sparked that movement is just the thing that I'm just a giving person. That's just the way my mother raised me. So whenever I see somebody with a need, I'm always thinking, like, what could I do? Like, from the smallest thing, I took my daughter and my wife to Rita's the other day, and the cashier had a little, you know, a tip box, like, you know, help me pay for my books. And I'm like, wow, you're like, what could I do to help Shorty pay for her books? Like, you know. So I'm always just thinking of ways to help other people. And it's crazy because my office is right across the street from the Capitol in D.C. Of course, my community center is in Southeast, but my office is in Northeast. And every day when I'm getting off at the tunnel to get off for my exit, you know, it's a homeless shelter right there. So I'm always thinking like, yo, what could I do to kind of help, you know, homeless people? And then my man has sent me a tweet the other day with this guy cutting a homeless person's hair. And I was like, that's it. Like, yo, okay, let me partner with some homeless shelters and see if, you know, I also do marriage coaching too and like relationship coaching. So I'm like, yo, maybe I can get out some of these homeless shelters, cut hair, but then while I'm cutting hair, also be leading a session on, you know, just trying to get them out of the situations they're in, or, you know, just being content with the situations that they're in. And, you know, so that's where the give back kind of came from. And then the way that I'm just trying to spread it is just really through Twitter. I mean, social media, I think, is such a beautiful thing if we use it right. You know, I think a lot of people, I don't want to coin it as wrong, you know, following your favorite celebrities or whatever, whatever. But I'm like using it to connect with people and, you know, get down with guys like you and like-minded people. Like, so just the other day, like one of my followers that said something like, hey, Kill, I'm in Minnesota, but yo, if you do this thing with the homeless, you know, let me know and I'll fly out. And I was like, I'll do you one better. Why don't you try to mirror what I'm doing in Minnesota? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we can get like-minded people in different communities. And, you know, I don't care if it's just in one community, it's two or three barbers who are doing the same thing I'm doing. You know, I would love to give back to just, you know, be across the United States, be across the world if we could. I mean, we had that movie a minute ago, Pay It Forward. And, you know, that was really dope. You know, that was inspiring to me to, you know, just know that there's such the some of the smallest things that we could do for somebody. Like cutting hair for me is nothing, you know. So, but it's just amazing how that can make, you know, I'm sure y'all feel it when y'all get a fresh cut, you feel good about yourself. You know what I mean? You know, you feel like you ready to, you ain't going out, you know, to the club or going nowhere without a fresh cut, you know. So it just makes you feel better. So, I mean, if making, you know, men feel better, I mean, giving them a haircut, I mean, that's nothing, you know. So prayerfully, more people will, you know, catch on to it. And, you know, we hashtag everything else, you know, so we hashtag that and prayerfully more people will mirror it. You know, that would just be dope, man.
I agree with you 100%, man. The fresh cut, I don't know what about it is, but when you get out that chair, you look at that mirror and you see that lineup, man, you feel like the most competent person in the world.
You feel like you can take over the world, man. You know, and more importantly than that, when you get out the chair and you know that you got the cut because you got a better grade. Like one of my teenagers, he was a lot of times doubt himself. And he's actually the reason why I started taking pictures, because what my plan was that every time he would doubt himself, I would go through my phone and kind of scroll through to let him see, look at all these times I cut your hair. Each one of these haircuts meant you passed the test. So every time he would kind of feel down about himself, I could just take out my phone and show him like, nah, fam, you can do this. You know what I'm saying? And it's that visual tool of like, man, I didn't realize you've been cutting my hair for so long. I didn't realize I got so many haircuts. I have kids who come in every week and get a fresh cut every week because they're passing the test every week, you know. So it definitely is helping them, man.
Hey, man, we appreciate that. And oh, sorry, Emilio, you was gonna jump in?
I was just going to say, you know, we gotta use this to harken back to one of our own friends who's also a barber, the good old look good, feel good, you know, definitely inspires you to go out and do more.
I agree with you 100 on that, man. And I was going to say, you know, you do so much community work. I wanted to know, and you also told that beautiful story about inspiring somebody out in Minnesota to kind of start doing their own projects for themselves. So I wanted you to kind of maybe give some of the blueprint to getting involved in the community. Like, what does one do to make their community a better place? Where do we start?
I mean, I think for a lot of people who are like 9-to-5 workers, you know, I always challenge people like, hey, like, you know, whatever city you're in, you know, Google nonprofits in that city or whatever. You know, I'm always about what speaks to your heart. You know, I have a big thing for homelessness because I've been in situations where me and my wife both got laid off at the same time, you know, and not too many of us are, you know, to a point where, you know, we're good to go if something like that happens, you know, and it was a blessing that, you know, family and friends stepped in and helped out. But I mean, to be truth be told, not, you know, we're all probably about a good 2 to 3, 4 paychecks away from being homeless ourselves. You know, so it's kind of like, to me, whatever speaks to your heart. So if homelessness speaks to your heart, you can literally, I mean, hell, we use Google for everything else, you know, Google homeless shelters in your city and figure out ways that you can volunteer. Or if working with kids speaks to your heart, you know, Google, you know, nonprofits, you know, that are working with kids that you want to work with, or if working with sick kids, you know. So I think the first thing is kind of figuring out what speaks to you, because I really truly believe that we need to be in certain positions. You know, it's almost like with sports, you know, you don't need a 2-guard at your point guard position because that point guard has a specific task to do in order to make your team win. So I want people first and foremost to be in the right position where they want to be. Like if you have a thing for working with homelessness, then you don't need to be working with kids. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's really at finding out and doing some soul searching within yourself, what you want to do. And literally, like, people always say, Google is your friend, you know, and, you know, every nonprofit, trust and believe, is looking for somebody to volunteer. They don't care if it's an hour. They don't care if it's once a month, you know, or every day, you know. So getting involved, you know, a lot of times people think it's very intimidating or I don't know what to do. And it really isn't. Sometimes it's getting involved is just if you see some kids in your neighborhood not doing anything, you could kind of be like, hey, you know, just have a conversation with them. You know, I'm 43. A lot of people my age and older are very apprehensive about talking to these teenagers because it's like, you know, I don't even want to deal with them. They, you know, they disrespectful, woo, woo, woo. And I mean, that's true. They are. But, you know, if you talk to them in a respectful way, you may, you know, actually start to get in the air. So, I mean, it's very simple. It's a very simple thing to do.
It is. And that's great that you're leading the movement. But, man, Kill, you've been phenomenal. I think you've just thoroughly educated us, like, on all these facets that I didn't know about, even when it comes from like music, but also just doing better in the community. Like, you really have put it into a great perspective, and we appreciate you for it. Sadly, we have to get to the famous Educate Us with Two-Piece time, which is, of course, though, the final two questions. The first one is always easy. How can our audience connect with you?
Oh, that's easy. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at KIL889. And my website is willmakebeatsforfood.com. My podcast, Apartment 5B, we have new episodes every Monday on the website. Usually on Wednesdays, I have something that I've written, whether it's a review, or it may be, you know, something like why Outkast is the best group ever. And then every Friday, I have a free mixtape that folk can get on and stream. It's everything from, you know, the best of Timbaland. I do a lot of best ofs, the best of Kane, the best of Mobb Deep, things like that. But then I also do, you know, throwbacks to 80s hip hop or 90s hip hop and things like that. So Twitter is like my thing. So that's always the best way to get at me.
Good, good, good. So people got options, and with those options come a lot of resources and perks. Great to hear. So now the last question, no pressure, just the last question that our audience is going to hear from you today. But could you leave us with some imparting wisdom?
I guess the biggest thing is kind of like what I was saying earlier, is just if everybody would take a little time to do a little soul search and just figure out what you could be doing for somebody else, because I feel like we're all called to be servants, you know, and even in marriage, a lot of times people go into it, a lot of couples that I coach, you know, it's like, well, what is he doing for me and what is she doing for me and everything like that. And I'm always teaching them like, yo, we're supposed to be servants to each other, you know, and I feel like we have to be servants not only to our own family, but to other people. You know, it's funny. It's like, I believe when you're walking in what you're supposed to do, it kind of, this is going to sound corny, but it's almost like what Charlie Murphy was saying about Rick James. Like, it was just the glow to him. Like, it's just the glow when you're doing what you're doing. Like, just being at Six Flags today, you know, like two or three kids asked me to help them. And my daughter was like, Daddy, do you know these kids? And I'm like, nah. They're like, well, why are they asking you to help? I don't know why. You know, one little girl's like, can you help him get this little boy off of me? And, you know, and I just think when you walk in where God wants you to walk, it, you know, it's a shine to you, you know. So, you know, I just always challenge people. And that's all it always is. I'm never like, go do this or go. It's just a challenge. You know, some people accept it, some people don't. It's all good. But I just challenge everybody to really figure out what could they be doing to help somebody else today. Because so many of us, myself included, we get caught in up in, well, what this person gonna do for me and what I'm gonna get from this and what I'm gonna get from that. Some days we just have to step back and just, you know, become a servant. You know, it could be something as simple as buying somebody's coffee in the morning. That could make somebody's whole day. You know, and you don't even really have to. You could just tell the cashier, like, boom, here's an extra five, whatever the person want behind me, it's on me. You know, and that can make a whole person's day right there. So that would be what I would leave folk with.
Boom, boom. I mean, I feel like you just let off all the sparks right there.
That's a good thing.
That is a great thing. We really do appreciate you having, you know, coming on the show today. I think you've really been amazing. I'm sure our audience has left with a new peace of mind and thinking things. I know I've left with a new peace of mind. I have my notebook here. I just had to write in some gems for myself to go back and reflect on. But we really do appreciate you coming on the show today, Kill.
No doubt, man. I pray again. It's a blessing when anytime somebody wants to talk to you. So I appreciate it.
And there you have it, folks. That was Kill, the producer, giving us that hip-hop knowledge and also spreading that community joy. Emilio, what you think, man?
Man, it's always great when you get a guy up here who, you know, self-proclaimed old head, spreading his knowledge and spreading, you know, he's spreading a lot of information and truth that we didn't know about. And the cool thing about that was I feel like if you did listen and you came for, you know, the producing aspect, the community aspect, and of course the culture, that you learned a lot. And it's very dope to have people like him who not only have their hands dabbling in the music industry and, you know, the currentness that comes with that, but also trying to make the community better and help uplift Black people. And I think it definitely hits a note. about him saying the lack of fathers in the urban community, and you know, me recently becoming a father, I, you know, extra little pinch to that, because you do realize that people need father figures. I'm not gonna say, you know, necessarily no shade anyone that, you know, doesn't have a father, but you need one. You need a father figure. If it can't be your birth one, you have to have someone that you can look up to. It's just how it goes. You need the two perspective. No matter what your child is, you need a male perspective for them so they have something to establish and relate to. But it's such a growing big need, and especially in the Black community where there's so little running around, and you know, that's one of the ways that you really have to help kids get on the right path. They need those two figures, a mom and a dad, or someone who could represent both, because, you know, I'm sure the studies will show that if you have those two figures in your life, you know, your chance for success already increases tenfold. But I mean, it's really great having Kill on here and breaking down dad and breaking down the music industry, and I really think he, you know, schooled us one time.
I agree, man. He definitely showed us the different aspects of producing, the different aspects of sampling, how you can become a producer nowadays. All you need is a beat machine,
yep,
and an iPad, and you can call yourself a producer. Yeah, but
pretty much.
But he does it more, you know, he's more of the, you know, I already studied the game. I study the game every day. Like, even though, you know, there's people in here that come in and out of the game, he's going to last because he's got all the tools to make yourself successful. And he studied it for a long time so that he's mastered his craft. So definitely shout out to Kill doing his thing on the producing end and bringing a new perspective to Educate Hustle.
Exactly. And the cool thing about him is you could tell he's learned to adapt. He didn't sit by and wait for his time to be over. He adapted, put on some new things, learned some new tricks, and that's how he's able to, as you say, last and be all about that longevity. But alas, let's get into our favorite moment of the Educate Hustle experience. Well, I should say, your favorite moment of Educate Hustle experience. How you, yes you, can reach us. Educate Hustle reach through a variety of different means of social media. We are on Snapchat at Educate Hustle. That's all one word, Educate Hustle. There you can follow us. You can see behind the scenes snaps, little inspirational things to get you throughout the week. And of course, get you inspired. We are also on Instagram at Educate Hustle Podcast. Once again, that is Educate Hustle Podcast. There we post pictures, photos, reminding you of our episode for the current week, inspirational quotes from guests, and sometimes if you're really lucky and you're good, Paul will give you some curated inspirational quotes to get you by. You can also like our page on Facebook. It's real simple. Just type in Educate Hustle, two words. You know you reached the right page because you'll see that logo that you guys all know and, of course, by now love. Now, I got to take a break from that plugin to go into some more plugin. If you have not already, please, please, please rate and review the show. The reviews are pouring in. We're seeing the increase, and we thank you so much, everyone who has done it. But for those who haven't, we're asking, where you at? Where you at? Please, please, please. Rate and review is just a simple process. All you have to do is go to iTunes Podcast, Apple Podcasts, it's called now. Search Educate Hustle, two words. You'll see our logo. Click it, and there'll be three columns. The middle column says review. Hit that one. Write a review. All you got to do is rate us 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars, and once again, 5 stars. And then you have to write a title to review. Your review itself, it could be something long and sweet as It's Lit Fam, or it could be something short and simple as Yo. Hopefully you don't put yo, but if you did put yo, that would still count. But let the 5 stars show with that yo, that you're yoing for a good reason. Anyways, please, if you have not, rate and review. It helps increase the awareness of the show, helps get us more viewers, and by getting more viewers, we get better guests, and by getting better guests, we make better shows. So if you have not already, please rate and review us on iTunes. And now, to go back into our initial plugging, if you have not already, please follow us on Twitter at educator_hustle. Once again, that is educator_hustle. There we do daily interactions, tweets, and of course, try our best to let you know what's going on in the Educate Hustle universe for that week. And then, of course, last but not least, if you really feel like Educate Hustle made a difference, really made you want to go out and do something, and really go and take the borders of life, or you just want to collab, do not hesitate to email us at educatehustlepodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is educatehustlepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, sir. And as always, bro, you got to lead us out, man. Lead us out.
People, once again, take the time to go out and do amazing things. It is such an inspiring time to do it. I honestly just want everyone to go out, like I said, conquer, take what you got, live life by the horns. You know, if you can and you have not stopped by your local YMCA, your local community shelters, and figure out how can you get involved in the community, how can you get involved in making maybe a child get on the right path to do something great. You know, it's think of all the people that helped you get to where you are now and what they mean to you, and think that you could be that person for someone else. So please, please, please go out, seize the day, and do what you can and make your community just a little bit better.
Yes, sir. And as always, you got to stay educated and keep hustling.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.